It's Friday night. This is your WWE SmackDown and AEW Rampage review, or as I call it, the SmackPage review for Friday, August 12, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. WWE went out of its way tonight to make the Intercontinental Championship feel important. When was the last time we really could say that? When was the last time the Intercontinental title was built up throughout the entire show and they headlined SmackDown with an Intercontinental Championship match? Doesn't happen very often. This is what happens when you have a part-time champion, of course, who doesn't appear all the time on TV. We have the U.S. title. You have to build it up on Raw. SmackDown has the Intercontinental title. You've got to build up your secondary title on that show as well. And you would watch SmackDown tonight. You would never know that the Intercontinental Championship was a secondary title. You would think that this is, as Michael Cole called it, the Workman's Championship, the most prestigious thing in this entire company. I love it. I love what they did with that title tonight. Triple H has done so far, still early, but Triple H has done a very good job, I think, of trying to emphasize the secondary championships. We had a video package tonight dedicated to all of the legends who have held that title before over the years, going back decades, all the big names and not so big names. They hyped up the match throughout the entire show. And they gave us Gunther and Shinsuke Nakamura as our main event tonight. A match that they gave a lot of time to. That is what they headlined SmackDown tonight with. I thought they had an excellent match. But that was not the only highlight of SmackDown. Tonight was also the night of returns. This is what Triple H has been doing ever since he took over as head of creative. We have had numerous people return to the company, numerous former faces from NXT who got their first push in NXT under Triple H, many of whom were cut, many of whom were released months ago, some last year. I'm sure Triple H was sitting back at the time. He had bigger things to worry about, his health issues, but he saw that going down. All he could do is shake his head. He was powerless to do anything about it. And he saw all of these talented people that he had invested time in, thinking that one day they would go to Raw, they would go to SmackDown, they would become stars, get cut left and right. And so ever since he took over the book a few weeks ago, he has been trying to right those wrongs. He did it with Dakota Kai. He finally called up Io Shirai. We have Dexter Lumis is back. We have Karrion Kross and Scarlett are back. Tonight, it was Hit Row's turn. Hit Row back on SmackDown. Hit Row went from Hit Row last year to Shit Row. Now they're back. Minus Swerve. Swerve's a little busy right now. But we had Top Dollar, we had Ashanti the Adonis, and we had B-Fab back on TV tonight. It's so nice to see that the budget has recovered. I'm so happy to hear that. All of the WWE fans will be very happy to hear that the budget has recovered enough for them to go back and rehire everybody that they got rid of. How about those budget cuts? You know, John Laurinaitis, I'm sure he was paid very well. He was one of the higher paid executives in the company. Now that he's gone, they have freed up all of this money. Triple H can go bring back all these people that they released. Hit Row was one of many Triple H projects from NXT. And we heard rumors about, and he refuted them, but we heard rumors about attitude issues, I believe, with Top Dollar and how he, you know, had caused headaches behind the scenes, which again, he denies all of that. This could very well have just been stuff that was floated by people behind the scenes looking to make them look bad on their way out. But that was the story at the time, that, you know, there were attitude issues with him and soured Vince McMahon on them as a group, and he took them off television and ultimately he kicked them to the curb. Thankfully, Triple H took over at just the right time. Hey, we heard the same thing about Max Dupri only a few weeks ago when he disappeared from television for about a week or two. What happened to Max Dupri? The report came out. Wade Keller talked about it, I believe, on the PW Torch website, that Vince McMahon, something that Max Dupri did or said, rubbed him the wrong way. He rubbed people in the company the wrong way, and he was taken off television, and they put his sister in there, Maxine Dupri, They weren't even referencing him there for about a week or two. And it just so happened to come right around the time that Vince McMahon went away and Triple H took over. And thankfully for him, it could not have come at a better time. Max Dupri was back on TV a week after that as if nothing ever happened. What did we hear with him? Rub people the wrong way. How many people have rubbed Vince McMahon the wrong way? Usually it's Vince McMahon doing the rubbing. That's why he's out of the company right now. All of these people rubbing Vince McMahon and rubbing people behind the scenes the wrong way. All these bullshit excuses. It was all just nonsense. Triple H now bringing cattle back into the barn. Everybody back in. Open the gate. Everybody back in. Trying to right the wrongs that were done by the previous administration. Now with Triple H in charge, he's clearly bringing back his favorites. I mean, that much so far is apparent. And look, if Swerve Strickland was free, I have no doubt in my mind that he would have been there tonight with the other members of Hit Row. He would have been right there on Fox tonight. The whole group, the whole band would have been back together. He's not doing too bad for himself, I would say, right now on AEW. He's one half of the tag team champion. Swerve is doing okay. But Swerve was not just going to sit around and wait to get the phone call to come back. Swerve don't have time for that. Swerve wanted to get back out there. I say good for him. And good for Hit Row. No matter what you may think of them, you at least want to be able to give them a chance. That's the thing. They never had a chance. Triple H now is going to give them a chance. And if nothing else, the reason I really like this move, what have I been talking about? Tag teams. Where are all the tag teams? Where have all the tag teams? I sound like Paula Cole when that song came out all those years ago. Where have all the cowboys gone? Where have all the tag teams gone? This is a company that needs to beef up its tag team division. If nothing else, Hit Row is a tag team they can now plug into the division. So I like the move. On AEW Dark, I mean Rampage, we have the return tonight of the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. We have not seen him in several weeks since he lost to Daniel Garcia on TV. So we had Bryan Danielson back for a promo tonight. And if you are a fan of the Trustbusters, oh boy, do I have the show for you. You had Trustbusters all over the show. They were busting all over the place. Busting makes them feel good. You got, this was the Trustbusters edition of Rampage tonight. And it is official. Right before I went live, I noticed that Tony Khan went on Twitter. I didn't pull it, but we have the graphic. Tony Khan put the graphic up. Parker Boudreaux, Harland, is All Elite. He is officially All Elite. He was on the show tonight. Ari Daivari was in the main event against Orange Cassidy. I did not like this episode of Rampage. I will just say that. I like SmackDown a lot. I did not like Rampage tonight. But you know what's funny about the Trustbusters? This is a relatively new group they just put together. They've been on Dark. And all of a sudden, they were all over this show tonight. And the only reason for that is because they are in the Trios tournament. They're doing the Trios Championship tournament. The Trustbusters are in there. Tony Khan figures, well, I guess we should start featuring the Trustbusters on TV for a few weeks since they're in this tournament. I don't know that we'll be seeing the Trustbusters on TV in a few weeks, but hit that like button and do sub to the channel. I want to thank everybody who got us to 70,000 last week. Now you got to get me to 71. So make sure you subscribe. Super chats are open. If you send one in, I will be reading them a little bit later on. I see a whole bunch of them popping up here. It's what I like to see. We are closing in on 200 likes. Here's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to do this from now on. And I got to give a shout out to Bear Wolf. He's in the chat. He's the one who gave me the idea. I think it's a great idea. We are going to try to get to 600 likes live during the stream. We'll get there anyway, but I want it live during the stream. Before I wrap everything up, we need to get at least 600 likes. If we get at least 600, we'll do Be the Booker later on in the stream. I know we have a lot of Be the Booker fans. So if we hit 600, then we will do Be the Booker. If not, well, we'll have to wait till next time. That's going to be up to you guys. So that's the magic number. That's the goal tonight. Let's get to 600. Let's talk about SmackDown. We had a first round match in the Women's Tag Team Championship tournament with Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah put together as a team, taking on the combo of Shotzi and Xia Li. This was rough. If I had to use one word to describe this match, rough would be the match, or rough would be the word for the match. Natty and Sonya Deville showed up outside to watch. They're going to be taking on Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark next week from NXT. So they're in the tournament. They showed up on the outside. Very early on in this match, Raquel and Shotzi, they end up going out after them. They put them down, and then they turn to fight each other. It was mass chaos outside the ring. 90 seconds into this match, we cut to our first ad break. There were a couple of moments. God, you know, WWE is very bold. I have to say, they're very bold with these ad breaks. 90 seconds in, 2 minutes. Even I wait like 11 or 12 or 13 minutes before I stick the first ad break in. I mean, YouTube, you know, they throw in the pre-roll and the post-roll. I'm talking about the mid-roll. I at least wait 12, 13, 14 minutes before I put fucking ads in my video. WWE, Fox, whoever it is, they go right to it 90 seconds in. They don't waste any time. But there were a couple of moments in this match where Shotzi and Aaliyah, they looked like they forgot what they were supposed to do. Shotzi, in particular, she looked like she was just out of it. I don't know what was going on there. Raquel looked good, though, and it was all about Raquel anyway. It was all a showcase for her power, so I thought she looked good in the match. She ended up pinning Xia Li after a Tejana bomb. So Raquel and Aaliyah, they advance in the tournament. So now we know that Raquel and Aaliyah are in. We know Dakota Kai and Io Shirai, or Io Sky, they're in. They advanced on Monday. And, you know, I'm looking at these first two matches that we have had so far in this Women's Tag Team Championship tournament, and it is and this is not a compliment. It is reminding me very much these matches so far. Two matches in of the Queen's Crown last year. And again, I don't mean that as a compliment. So hopefully things will pick up with this tournament. We need an upset in this thing. So the NXT ladies, they ought to pick up the win next week. Karrion Kross, he was the big buzz last week on SmackDown. The big buzz was all about him and Scarlett coming back at the end and laying out Drew McIntyre, confronting Roman Reigns. Karrion Kross was in the back with Scarlett for a promo. And Scarlett was standing behind him, and Kross said that in the midst of chaos, opportunity tends to present itself. He said that that's what happened last week. He said McIntyre and Reigns are the chosen ones, and it must be nice. He said that he and Scarlett were cast out of paradise like a broken toy to be forgotten. Said that they waited for the perfect time to strike with a vengeance. Everybody knows about the bloodline. Now they are going to show them a new timeline. And he ended it with, everybody pays the toll. TikTok. And then Karrion Kross took a peek around the curtain that was next to him. And he looked, and standing off in the distance in the back, getting ready to come out for his promo segment, we could see Drew McIntyre. Drew couldn't see him, but he could see Drew. You could hear them play Drew's music, and he was headed out to the ring next for the next segment. I'm watching this, and it is amazing how much Scarlett adds to Kross's presentation just by standing there. She doesn't even have to do anything. All she has to do is stand next to him, stand behind him, and it's incredible. Just her mere presence, what she adds to the entire act, and it's no surprise that for those who don't know, he had mentioned this in an interview recently. Might have been with SEScoops.com, but he mentioned that he turned down the opportunity, and actually this probably was the match that ultimately went to Big Cass when he wrestled Wardlow on Dynamite all those months ago. I don't know if that was the match, that's my guess, but he turned down the chance to step into the ring with Wardlow on an episode of Dynamite, and obviously he would have been soundly defeated. But he turned it down because it was going to be a one-off. It was just going to be him. He did not want to do anything without Scarlett. Scarlett, he recognizes and is smart enough to know that Scarlett is a very important part of his presentation. And it doesn't mean that Kross sucks and he needs her. Otherwise, he can't, you know, be without her. Look at Macho Man and Elizabeth. You know, would Macho Man have succeeded on his own? Macho Man was more charismatic than anybody I've ever seen, except maybe The Rock. In the history of the business, when I think of who is the most charismatic of all time, and I grew up watching the Macho Man, so I'm kind of partial, it's got to be Randy Savage or The Rock. I mean, it's got to be one of the two. So Savage, I think, would have been fine, but she was such an important part of his act and such an important part of his push when he was first getting over in WWE. Yes, I think he would have still been successful, but would it have been on that level? Maybe not. Maybe not right away. You know, sometimes you just have two people, you put them together, and it just works. Scarlett never should have been split away from Cross in the first place. The moment that they took her away from him, that was the beginning of the end. The stupid mask was just the fucking, you know, salt in the wound. You know, the wound was already there. The mask that they put on his face, that was just the salt in the wound. Why they were split up, I'll never know. Even if they wanted Scarlett to wrestle, you don't have to split them up, but they did. So that was the first thing that struck me watching this was, man, this just works so much better having her, you know, having her be there with him. But I also liked what he said in this promo. You know, he made the comment about kind of being cast out of paradise and being the broken toy. And I think that's a great analogy, too. It really is. I mean, that's exactly what happened. You know, he was the shiny new toy who they called up. He was the NXT champion when he got called up. He was the shiny new toy. And it would be as if you take that new toy out of its package and you rip its leg off. And God knows I did a lot of that when I was a kid. Okay, I was a terrible kid. I was probably ADHD and I was never diagnosed. I was as hyper as you can imagine. I turned out okay. But when I was a kid, that's the sort of thing I would do. I would have a toy. I would rip the arms off, rip the head off, rip the legs off, try to put the leg where the arm was. Vince McMahon ripped open this package. He ripped off the leg. And when the toy couldn't stand and it kind of fell over, he said, it's broken. And he threw it into the pile. That's a great analogy for basically the Karrion Kross push last year. So I like that he incorporated that into his promo, a little dose of reality there, because that's exactly what happened. So Drew McIntyre walked to the ring. He said it's an exciting time in WWE, and there's a lot of new faces showing up, or a lot of old faces, I guess you might say, coming back. He said one of those new faces is Karrion Kross, who attacked him last week. He said he understands the man has waited for an opportunity for a year, and he wanted to make an impact by attacking the number one contender, and then staring down the champion. McIntyre said the problem is that he was the number one contender and he was left looking like trash last week. He said that he would give Cross three options: a knockout, a hospital, or a graveyard. 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks in a row, we get hospital mentions. You want to know, you want to see change. You want evidence of change. Forget all these new faces. The fact that we got the word hospital on this show 2 weeks in a row and nobody was shit-canned over it, that's change. So McIntyre said he had shocking news for the crowd. Roman Reigns is not here tonight, everybody. He is not in the building. Said it took an entire bloodline to get the job done against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Scarlett made her entrance. Played the music. Everything went black and white. No Cross. It was just Scarlett. She came down to the ring. She got into the ring. McIntyre was looking at her because, I mean, come on, right? Everybody's looking at Scarlett. There's a reason why before she came to WWE, she would call herself the Smoke Show. She's incredible. So Drew is looking at her, and he's distracted. He gets jumped from behind by the Usos. They worked over McIntyre. Scarlett was just standing. She got on the apron, and she stood there, and she watched the entire thing as they're beating him down. They put down Drew with the 1D. And Scarlett is smiling. The Usos then turn their focus to her, and they're talking to her. And Jey Uso tells her that this is bloodline territory. And she laughs at him and says, "That's funny." She said something, couldn't really pick up what it was. And Michael Cole said that she told the Usos to tell Roman Reigns the same thing. It was something along those lines. So we got a video package. After this was not the end of this with McIntyre and the Usos. There was more yet to come. But we got a video package at this point in the show highlighting the Intercontinental Championship. The championship that Pat Patterson himself won in that famous tournament in Rio de Janeiro. I remember it well. I remember when I saw footage of that for the first time. I couldn't believe it. I was trading tapes, asking around, does anybody have footage of this tournament? And the day that I finally got to watch it, I couldn't believe it. I have it up in my closet somewhere. It might be worth something. Pat Patterson winning the tournament in Rio de Janeiro. But they had highlights of all the big names that have held the title over the years. Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Shawn Michaels, Mr. Perfect, Honky Tonk Man, who I saw on his Twitter is teasing one more match. See, everybody, all these old guys now, they saw Ric Flair do it, now they're going to do it. But I thought this video package, it was great, very much like the one they did a couple of weeks ago on the United States Championship, right? They did that on Raw, now they did the same thing on SmackDown, and I love it. Emphasis on the titles. Emphasis on the title. The part of it is out of necessity because, again, Roman Reigns is not around all the time. But emphasis on the titles. That is what we need to see more of. The Viking Raiders made their entrance. They were going to have Ivar one-on-one against Kofi Kingston. That was the plan. Kingston, though, attacked them from behind with a kendo stick. Eventually, though, two-on-one, they got the better of him. And they got Kofi down on the ground. Ivar climbed up on the barricade. And from the barricade, a few feet up, he dove off and splashed Kofi on the floor, which looked vicious. Without having to call them the new and vicious Viking Raiders, instead of beating us over the head with that stupid name every week, this looked like a vicious attack. So we never got the match. And at least we didn't get an obnoxiously positive promo from Kofi Kingston before this. I like that he just came out there and started whipping these guys with the kendo stick. So this was fine. They're setting up some segment next week where they're going to have a funeral for the New Day. Because now Xavier Woods has been taken out. Kofi Kingston's been taken out. There is no New Day left. We'll see what they do next week. In the back, Sami Zayn walks up to the Bloodline locker room, and he knocks on the door. He's looking for Roman Reigns. Jimmy and Jay come out, because, of course, Roman's not there. Paul Heyman wasn't there tonight, or at least not on camera, he wasn't. Sammy starts to tell the Usos that he heard what they said last week, but before he could say anything else, Drew McIntyre attacks the Usos from behind, beats the crap out of them, lays them both out, says that stay out of his business or he's going to beat their asses again. You could see, by the way, as he's kneeling down to talk smack to them, in the background, down the hallway, Sami Zayn is backing away, hoping not to be seen. And then Drew went off to go find Sammy. We come back, and standing in the ring are two local talents who we have never seen before. And they're identified as Brandon Scott and Trevor Irving. And we have no idea who their opponents are going to be. And then it clicked because I read the report earlier that Hit Row was probably coming back tonight. So when they said there was going to be a mystery team facing them, I knew exactly who it was going to be. The one thing I did not know is whether or not B-Fab would be with them. Because all the reports that I saw earlier today from Fightful or wherever it was is that Hit Row was likely going to be on the show tonight. They mentioned Top Dollar and they mentioned Ashanti the Adonis, but there was no mention of B-Fab. And, you know, I was talking about Scarlett and Cross before and how important she is to his presentation. I felt the same way or a similar way about B-Fab with Hit Row. When I would watch B-Fab wrestle on NXT, she wasn't very good. She's very green. She really does not need to be in the ring. If they want to put her in the ring, she really should be in NXT. But she's on the main roster now because she is back. I was very happy to see her back as part of the act. It was Hit Row. They hit the Hit Row music. Out comes Top Dollar, Ashanti the Adonis, and B-Fab. And look, it makes sense because the first voice that you hear in their theme song is hers. She has to be with them. So here comes Hit Row, and I can only imagine that this right here, poor, look at this, Vince McMahon. This is what Vince, this is the look that Vince has had on his face now for the last 2 weeks. As he has seen all of these people that he thought he got rid of. Triple H has brought them back. It's like being in a Facebook group and banning all these people. And then one of your moderators goes and unbans them. That's the look that I would have on my face. I just picture Vince. What else is Vince doing anyway? He's sitting at home in his chair watching this with that look on his face. So this was Vince McMahon when Hit Row came out here on this show. But again, I'm very happy that they have B-Fab with them. I think she's an important part of the act. I don't need to see her in the ring. But in their corner, promos, I think that she fits the group. They already lost one member, right? You got to keep the other three. So I'm glad that she was with them. This was a squash to reestablish them. Top Dollar hit a running shoulder tackle and a running knee in the corner. He caught one of the geeks here on his shoulders in position for a Samoan drop, and he was holding him. Then the other geek came, and he caught him in front by his chest. So he's holding both of them. And then he hit the world's strongest slam, took both of them down. And they ended up winning with their finish. They call the heavy hitter, where he tags in Ashanti the Adonis. And while Top Dollar is holding the opponent up in the air, Ashanti hits a drop kick right to the side of the guy's head. And this was a picture-perfect drop kick. This looked good. And then Adonis pinned him for the 1-2-3. After the match, they got in the ring. They cut a promo reintroducing themselves. They each had a chance to talk. It ended with B-Fab saying, "If you didn't know, now you know." And interestingly, they referred to themselves as the OG3. So, I don't know if that's true or not. This was Swerve Scott's group. And they kind of built the whole thing around him. But they call themselves the OG3. And look, it's not the same without Swerve. He was the star of the group. It was his group. They built a group around him. Those vignettes they would do, he was in the recording studio, it was always him. His music, he's the one sitting in the chair. He was the glue that held that group together, and now he's gone. So it's not the same without him being there, even though Vince McMahon thought Top Dollar was going to be the star. That was the plan anyway. They were going to push Top Dollar as the real star of the group. But look, you know, if you call them up, you have to at least give them a chance. And what annoys me is it isn't even so much that some people from NXT get called up, and after a few months, it doesn't work out. Sometimes the booking really just doesn't support them. Look at Cross. Cross got called up. He was up for about 4 months before they shit-canned him. And I don't blame him for that. But what really pisses me off is when people get called up and they never even get a chance. They never get a chance. Hit Row never had a chance. Xia Li never had a chance. Maybe now she will. Under Vince McMahon, never, never. She got vignettes. She got all this build and build and build until she finally debuted, and then she never did anything. She never showed up on TV. Rarely did we see her on TV. How are you going to call somebody up and invest the time in them and invest the time for some of these great vignettes they put together? That's time and money. Television time is not cheap. I forgot somebody, you know, they crunched the numbers once. How much one television segment of WWE, how much it's worth? Thousands and thousands of dollars. Television time is very valuable. How are you going to call these people up from NXT and then just give up on them without even giving them an opportunity? So I said, Vince McMahon, you know, for all that you can say about all the successes he's had in his career, all I would hear from people back in the 90s, when they would talk about signing a deal with Vince, how much did he sign you for? $1,500. Literally, their contract was a $1,500 guarantee in some cases. That's all they were guaranteed. $1,500. Of course, they were going to make more than that. But his standard line was, I can't promise you X amount of dollars. What I can promise you is an opportunity. You will work for me, and you will have an opportunity, and you will end up making more money. What happened to that Vince McMahon, where he would give people opportunities? These people were not given opportunities. These people weren't given shit. That's why I say the Vince McMahon from 25 years ago, 30 years ago, very different than the Vince McMahon of today. For all the people who defended him and, you know, talked about how can you say these things, he's a genius, he's this, he's that. Maybe at one time he was, but not anymore. These people now are being given a second lease on life, and I'm happy to see it. Because they deserve it. And now we have another tag team in the division. They still need more, but it's a step in the right direction. They aired a commercial right after this, announcing a first-time-ever match for Raw this Monday. It is going to be AJ Styles, challenging Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship. So that's interesting. That should be a very good match. I am looking forward to that. What is wrong with me? I have been looking forward to Monday Night Raw the last couple of weeks. I've been going live. I'll be live again this Monday. We'll talk about Monday Night Raw. What's going on here? Am I feeling okay? I don't know. It's very unlike me. That should be a good match. I'm looking forward to that. So up next, they had a table set up in the ring. Hey, Armani, thank you for the sub. Appreciate it. They had a table set up in the ring for the contract signing for Clash at the Castle with Liv Morgan and Shayna Baszler. They're going to be wrestling for the SmackDown Women's Championship. First, though, Michael Cole and Pat McAfee, and they had a graphic, too. They acknowledged the death of Judo Jean LaBelle, which was very appropriate given that the first person out next was Ronda Rousey, who we have not seen since SummerSlam. They did a storyline suspension after she attacked the referee at SummerSlam. Judo Jean was her mentor, for those who don't know. Jean actually once called her a sadistic wench. He called Ronda Rousey a sadistic wench, but he said it with love. So Ronda came out of the crowd, and she had a duffel bag in her hand. She climbed into the ring. She said that she was fined a lot of money, and she opened up the bag, and she emptied out a shitload of cash. She said, let's be honest, it's not going to be the last time. She said, being the baddest is expensive, but I can afford it. So she didn't say much, but what she said wasn't very good, because again, Ronda Rousey is a terrible promo. But at least they kept it brief. Security came out, referees came out. They were motioning for Ronda to leave the ring. Gabriel. Gabriel Jan. I love Gabriel. Such an evil name. I mean that in the nicest way. Gabriel. I think I was just watching that Schwarzenegger movie a few weeks ago, End of Days. I think the main character, I think the main character was named Gabriel in that movie. I love it, though. Welcome. Thank you for the sub, Gabriel. So they're trying to motion Ronda, like, you don't belong here. You're suspended. You're not supposed to be here. You need to get out of here. She ended up leaving the ring and tossing a female security guard to the ground. She teased putting her in an arm bar, but she let go of her. And she started to head to the back. And before she could get to the back, she is confronted on the stage area by Shayna Baszler. Baszler says to Ronda, she goes, you know, you can't be doing this sort of thing. That's not how things work around here. That's not how you get what you want. What are you doing? You can't do that. And Ronda told Shayna, she goes, you used to be a killer. She proceeded to the back. Shayna made her way to the ring for the contract signing. She said that she won the gauntlet match last week. She said Liv Morgan just happens to be the next one on her list, and she will be the next one who falls. Baszler says she couldn't wait for Cardiff because she's going to tear Morgan limb from limb. Liv Morgan then came out. She still had the brace on her arm, selling the arm bars from Ronda at SummerSlam. There were fans in the crowd this week who chanted, you tapped out at her. It was not as bad as last week. The reaction was not loud boos. The whole building wasn't chanting it, but there were enough people where you can hear it chanting, you tapped out at her. She said Shayna was like a bootleg Ronda Rousey. And she said that she would beat Shayna as well. And she signed the contract. She held up her championship and she went to go turn to leave. Baszler grabbed the injured arm. She slammed it onto the table. Baszler then stomped on the bad arm, and she grabbed the arm again. This time, though, Liv used her feet to push off the ropes, and she bulldogged Baszler through the table and put Shayna through the table face first. So she got lucky again. She keeps lucking her way out of these situations, does Liv Morgan. The thing that I like most about all this had nothing to do with Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan was an afterthought in this. What I liked about this, and it was brief, was the interaction between Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, because it gives me hope that at some point soon we are going to have the two of them put together in some way on television, which is something that I've been calling for a while and I've been hoping for as heels. I don't know if they'll be heels or baby faces or what, but they're bringing back the women's tag team titles, so all the more reason I could see them putting the two of them together and giving them a run. But it gives me hope that Triple H is hopefully planning something with them on TV. You know, I look ahead to Clash at the Castle. You know, it's a little early for predictions. Bearwolf says we have just passed 400 likes. All right, well, that's pretty good, but we still have a ways to go before we hit 600, so it's up to you guys. But Clash at the Castle is still many weeks away. I look ahead to the pay-per-view, and I'm thinking Liv is, again, she's going to get by the skin of her knuckles. She's going to find a way to win that match. And then coming out of that match, Ronda Rousey, maybe, is going to be the one who ends up bringing out the killer in Shayna Baszler. I could see that. Liv wins, and it just sends Shayna off the deep end, and she remembers what Ronda told her, and she just destroys this girl. But I'd like to see more interaction between the two of them on TV in the future. Backstage, the Usos ask Sami Zayn, hey, where'd you go earlier when we got beat up? Where'd you go run off to? And Sami was saying he was trying to go get help. And Jay said, look, remember what I told you last week? You need to step up or you're going to get left behind. You're not going to be allowed to wear that Bloodline t-shirt anymore. And he told Jimmy, he goes, let's go out to the ring and call out Drew McIntyre. So we go to a break. We come back from the break. Usos come to the ring, and they're calling out Drew. Want Drew to get a partner to come on out here. McIntyre walks out, no partner, gets in the ring, and we got a match. So this started out as basically a handicap situation, 2-on-1. Usos took over after a super kick. We're beating down McIntyre until Madcap Moss ran to the ring. They played his theme music, and again, some of this new theme music is so generic. I couldn't tell you who it's for. That's the thing that I always liked about, you know, wrestling and the theme music. You'd hit the first chord, the first string, the first note of someone's theme song, and you would instantly know who it is. You would either pop or you would boo. There's a lot of people like Madcap running out here. They'll play the music. I'm like, what? Who's that for? I have no idea until I actually see the person coming to the ring. It's so generic. But he runs down, so now we have ourselves a tag team match. He ran wild on the Usos. McIntyre and Moss work together to clear the ring. We come back from another break. Usos are in control. They've got Moss isolated on their side of the ring. He fought back. McIntyre got the hot tag. He hit a neck breaker on Jimmy. Was setting up with a Claymore kick. Sami Zayn, though, shows up. And Sami Zayn jumps up into the ring. McIntyre went after Sami. That allowed Jimmy to hit a super kick. Jay followed that up with the Uso splash. Only got a near fall out of it. Uso set up for the 1D, but Moss pulled Jay out of the ring. They brawled around ringside, fell over the barricade. In the ring, McIntyre hit the Claymore kick for the win. After the match, McIntyre tried to give Jay the Claymore as well, but Sami jumped in the way, and he took the bullet for Jay Uso. He took one for the team. Sami doing his best in the line of fire impression here, like he's a Secret Service agent, jumping in the line of fire, trying to prove himself to the Bloodline. I'm not a big fan of the Usos losing like this, but at least here it served a purpose, so I'm not going to shit on it too much, but again, they are the unified tag team champions. So I would not be necessarily beating them in this situation, but what else are you going to do? I mean, Roman Reigns is not around. They are his representatives, right? They're his blood. McIntyre got one over on them. Next week, Roman's going to be back, so in the context of the story, it made sense. We cut to the back. Who is that? Is that Killer Boy? Is that Killer Boy? There it is. Killer Boy. I had to take the scroll off. I couldn't see the text. Killer Boy Wood. Thank you for the sub. So in the back, we have Maximum Male Models. There's Max Dupree. There's Maxine Dupree. They're leading a photo shoot with Massé and Mansoir. Los Lotharios show up. I saw that Angel Garza. He's Angel Garza again. He got his last name back. Humberto might be getting his last name back too. At least some people are getting their name back. I wish we can get Walter back, but I think that's long gone now. They are firmly entrenched in Gunther, so we're not going to get Walter back. But there are some people who apparently are getting part of their names back. But they didn't identify them by their individual names here. Los Lotharios showed up, and they said they wanted to be part of Maximum Male Models. Max said that they're not Maximum Male Models material. Angel said, "We're not talking to you. I wasn't directing this at you. I was talking to her. They were talking to Maxine." And they told her to give them a call before walking off. Max said, we got to focus here. Focus on the photo shoot. And they went back to work. You know, when this whole angle started, before I even, you know, saw it play out on TV, they were doing it in, like, the dark matches and stuff. I had floated Los Lotharios would be perfect for this gimmick, to join whatever this faction was that Dupree was going to be leading, right? It just seems to me like they fit perfectly into a group like this. So we'll see if they follow through or if this is just meant to lead to a match. I could just as easily see this leading to a tag team match with Mansoor and Mace wrestling them next week or something. Kayla Braxton was in the back with Rick O'Shea. And he talked about beating Happy Corbin last week, and Ricochet said that he's more locked in right now than he's been in a very long time. It's the Triple H effect. Ricochet is he's feeling it now. Ricochet, man, he's got a big smile on his face. Ricochet says, "Shit, there might be life left yet for me here on this show." So Ricochet is really in a positive headspace right now. He says he's ready to get a shot at reclaiming the Intercontinental title, whoever wins in the main event tonight. And Happy Corbin shows up and he nails him, knocks him down, says that they're not done with each other yet. So that feud will continue. Speaking of the main event, we already are at the main event portion of this show. The main event was for the Intercontinental Championship. It was Gunther defending his title against Shinsuke Nakamura, looking to become a 3-time Intercontinental Champion. As Walter walked to the ring, Michael Cole really put over. This was the theme of the entire show. He really put over the significance of the IC title. He said it's become known as the Workman's Championship. Well, most people called it the Workhorse title. He called it the Workman's Championship because the man who holds it goes to work. Thank you, Michael Cole. I didn't know that, by the way. Did you know that the man who holds that Intercontinental Championship, the workman, he goes to work? The fuck you say? So that man goes to work. He makes every live event. He makes every television. It was almost like they were burying Roman Reigns here with this dialogue. He makes every live event. He makes every television show. He defends the title across the globe, all over the world, which is why it is so important to these men. And then Cole and McAfee, they took turns rattling off all the big names that have held the title. They mentioned people like Scott Hall, and I think one of them mentioned Mr. Perfect and The Rock, and on and on and on. So again, really laying it on thick, okay, about why this title means so much. So Gunther backed Nakamura into the corner. He missed a chop. Nakamura rocked him with some hard kicks. And Gunther caught Nakamura with a boot to the face, locked on the Boston Crab, and then switched over to the STF. Nakamura escaped, fought back with kicks, and Gunther responded with a hard slap. Nakamura locked on an armbar. Gunther, though, broke free, and he destroyed Nakamura. He laid in a wicked chop. Ultimately, that sent Nakamura to the floor ahead of the final break. We come back from that break. We have, I'm just going to call him Walter. I hate saying Gunther over and over. Gunther. Walter. His fucking name is Walter. Walter and Nakamura, they traded stiff shots. Walter regained control with the German suplex. He went for a diving splash, but as he came down, Nakamura caught him in an armbar. It looked kind of clunky, but that was the spot that they were going for. Nakamura rocked Gunther, there I go again. Walter with a knee to the face. I hate these fucking name changes. Rocked Walter with a knee to the face, and he followed that up with a sliding German suplex in the ropes. Walter quickly recovered. He hit a shotgun dropkick. Nakamura, though, went to the corner. He gained control, and he went to the corner to go set up for the Kinshasa. And this was the moment where I realized that this was really working, because they spent the entire show airing video packages and, again, really building it up, not just on commentary, but if you were in the building, you could watch this stuff on the big screen, right? And this was the main event of the show. They positioned it as the main event of the show. And Nakamura is still a beloved babyface. He's not the top babyface in the company or anything like that, but, you know, he's got plenty of fans. Nakamura goes into the corner, and he is setting up for the Kinshasa, and the people were going nuts. The people were losing their minds. This was no piped-in cheers situation. And by the way, more than half this show was piped-in cheers again. I didn't mention it because I'm sure you're sick of me mentioning it, so I'm trying to tone it down. But FYI, it's not like they're going away. This was not a situation where they were piping in anything. You could see everybody was on their feet. People were going nuts. They were dying to see this man hit the Kinshasa. And he went to go hit the move. Walter, though, just destroyed him with a clothesline for a near fall. Fans broke into a very loud, "This is awesome" chant. Walter locked on a sleeper hold. Nakamura broke free. Finish in the match came when Walter hit the shotgun dropkick to Nakamura's back this time. And he hit the powerbomb with the high stack pin for the win. After the match, Nakamura was shown he was standing outside looking at Gunther celebrating and with the championship around his waist. You know, Ludwig. Jesus Christ. These fucking names. Putting the title around Walter. And they zoomed in on Nakamura's chest and he had welts all over his chest. You know, just you could see from the damage from all the chops. And that is how they went off. Actually, I think they went off the air like a minute early, but that was a damn good main event. I very much enjoyed that match. And Walter, in the main event where he belongs. The first of many main events that he should be in. And I will give this company credit from the moment they introduced him on TV. And this goes back to Vince McMahon, because Vince McMahon was still in charge at that time. From the moment that he debuted on TV right on through now under Triple H, they have handled him perfectly. They have booked him like a dominant force. They have booked him like a world beater. They put the Intercontinental Championship on him. He is going to play a role. I mean, everything they did on the show is going to play a role in elevating that title, but he's the perfect person to have that championship on at this moment if you're trying to elevate that title. And he should not be beaten for a very long time. So pretty much everything that they have done with, I mean, name change aside, everything that they have done with him so far on the main roster has been perfect. And the more main events and the more matches like this that he has, it will only establish him that much more on this brand. You know, he is one of the top heels on SmackDown. When you look at the layout of the SmackDown roster right now, who are the top heels? Roman Reigns is the number one heel in the company. Karrion Kross is slotted internally as the number two heel on SmackDown. So you've got Roman Reigns number one. You've got Karrion Kross number two. Scared the shit out of me. JM, holy moly, with the $200 super chat drop, just scared me. I almost wet myself. I thought there was a fucking creature in the wall. I go, where is that growling coming from? JM, you are a beast. Anyway, what I was saying before I got scared shitless there was that Walter is the de facto number three babyface now on SmackDown. They have Karrion Kross listed internally as number two. That would make Walter number three. And that's not a bad place for him to be at all. Eventually, he'll be number two, and eventually, he could be number one. Because Roman Reigns ain't going to be around forever. Or maybe he'll switch brands, or maybe he'll go back to being a babyface at some point. Walter at some point will be the number one heel. Whether it's Raw, whether it's SmackDown, depends on the draft. He will be the number one heel. He could be that guy. And it's matches like the one that we saw tonight that are going to just help elevate him there that much faster. So I love what they did here. And really, when I look back on this episode of SmackDown, I thought that this was a very good show. Now, as far as the draft, I mentioned draft, and I saw there was a report from Fightful earlier today. Nothing is confirmed, but there are talent in the company who believe that there is going to be a draft coming out of Clash at the Castle. So within the next month, within the next 4 or 5 weeks, there may well be a WWE draft. And this is around the time that they would be getting ready for the draft anyway. Last year, I think it was in October. I still think that's a terrible time for a draft. If it were me, it would come right after WrestleMania. That's how the draft was when they first started doing it. It was in April, I believe it was April 2002, when they had the very first draft. Sometime around then, that's really the better time to do it. But we might be getting one next month. So keep that in mind that the draft may be coming. We'll have to wait and see. I just don't like the idea of there being a draft so close to Survivor Series if they insist on doing the Raw versus SmackDown thing. I just don't think the timing makes sense. Triple H has time to sort all of that out. Next Friday, SmackDown is going to be in Montreal. I don't know if anything big in wrestling ever happened in Montreal. I can't think of anything. Oh, that's right. There was one thing. There was that one thing that happened. Do you realize, by the way? Get ready. Where's that? That's that Game of Thrones meme I sometimes see online. Something is coming or whatever. Get ready. We're headed for the 25-year anniversary this November of the Montreal Screwjob. So I'm sure WWE will, I'm sure they'll mention that at least once at some point. 25 years since the Screwjob is coming up in November. They're going to be in Montreal next Friday. Roman Reigns is going to come back to work, and he's going to go face-to-face with Drew McIntyre ahead of their match at Clash at the Castle. Drew McIntyre was on Twitter earlier today dropping a little tease that he might be bringing back his old theme song, which I know he has been dying to do. He has wanted to bring back Broken Dreams for years, and he was always denied. Now, under Triple H, we'll see if he gets it at Clash at the Castle. I don't think he would be teasing it on Twitter unless it was a done deal. So I think we're going to get a Broken Dreams entrance from him at Clash at the Castle. That's a fucking great song. So hopefully that's what happens. Natalya and Sonya Deville are going to take on Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark in the opening round of the Women's Tag Team Championship Tournament. And the Viking Raiders will host a Viking funeral for the New Day. You know, it's exciting to be, you know, happy about SmackDown again. SmackDown was just in this awful, awful place just for months. And in the last few weeks, much like Raw, there is a reason to be optimistic. It is not a perfect show. The show is not radically changed just yet. If you watch SmackDown now and compare it to SmackDown from 4 weeks ago, it is not a radical change. But there are enough positive changes that it has me excited to see where they go with this show as the weeks go on. So this SmackDown gets a thumbs up from me. Watching Netflix without ExpressVPN is like me buying tickets to a Hall & Oates concert in Madison Square Garden, but only hearing the opening act with Train. I'm sure you remember that story. I ended up getting a Train concert with a quick cameo by Hall & Oates at the end. I wasn't very happy about that, and I wouldn't be very happy without ExpressVPN either. For those who don't know, Netflix has different content libraries for every country. So what we have access to here may not be the same that you have access to if you live someplace, for example, in Europe. Right? The Dark Knight is one of my favorite movies of all time, but it was taken off Netflix in the US a few months ago. I can still watch it on Netflix in other countries, like Japan, using ExpressVPN. Without it, I would only have access to a fraction of what Netflix offers, just based on where I live. How is this possible? By spoofing my location, I control where Netflix and other streaming sites think I'm located. It's simple. I just open up the app, select the country I want. In this case, it was Japan. I tapped one button to connect, and when I refreshed the page, it was there. What I love most about ExpressVPN is that it has servers in 94 different countries, giving me access to thousands of new shows and movies. It also has blazing fast speeds, so I can stream in HD with zero buffering, and it's compatible with all of my devices. I can watch stuff on my TV, my laptop, or my phone. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. ExpressVPN.com/solomonster. So now we go from SmackDown to a little show called Rampage. Rampage Night 2, by the way, of their Quake by the Lake. This was taped the other night in Minneapolis. Now, this is a rare week. It's amazing how quickly things can change. You go back a month, and I would have been talking about how, oh my God, I can't believe how fucking awful this SmackDown was. Rematch after rematch after rematch, and this stupid thing and that stupid thing, two-minute matches. Oh my God, this show is awful. And then we would go to Rampage, and honestly, Rampage is hit or miss. But for the most part, Rampage is a pretty decent show. Sometimes it's a good show, very good show, quick hour of wrestling. Tonight, I really enjoyed SmackDown, and then we came to Rampage, and I mean, nothing to really be excited about with this show. Except we had the return of the American Dragon. So it was good to see Bryan Danielson back on TV. Tony Schiavone was in the ring, and he asked Danielson about being 100%. How are you? We haven't seen you since you lost that match to Daniel Garcia. And Garcia has been calling himself the Dragon Slayer. So the two of them are going to have a best 2 out of 3 falls match on Dynamite next week. And the Dynamite show next week is part of this promotion for the new Game of Thrones show. So you've got the dragon tie-in there. By the way, I don't know how many of you have seen this. Somebody just sent me a link to the quick clip on YouTube. Maybe it's floating around on Twitter. They have a new 3D billboard promoting the new Game of Thrones show right in the middle of Times Square. This thing is fucking amazing. This thing is fucking, you know, maybe after I'll try to pull it up here, but you can find it on your own. It's a dragon and he's moving around and then he blows fire, but it's like 3D, like he's coming out at you. If I was driving through Times Square, I'd be looking up, I'd be crashing into the taxi cab in front of me, but it looks amazing. Now I wish I was a Game of Thrones fan. I can get into it, but I've never seen a single episode of that fucking show. So Danielson said, there's nothing that makes him feel more alive than being in the ring. He says that he will never willfully stop wrestling. The key word there is willfully, because he did get forced against his will once upon a time into retirement. But he will never willfully stop wrestling. He said somebody is going to have to end his career because he will never leave wrestling on his own. Doing his best Ric Flair impression here on this show. Daniel Garcia made his way out. He had a microphone in his hand. He called Danielson his hero. He looked like, KD says, Garcia looked like he was going to cry. You're my hero. He said that he doesn't know how many times he can put up with Danielson retiring and coming back. He said that it hurts him and it makes him want to hurt Danielson. And Garcia said that he's going to hurt Danielson so bad that he's going to end his career. And Danielson said that he's okay with people saying that. He's okay with people threatening him and saying that they're going to end his career. He said that he cannot stand that sports entertainment bullshit. He said Garcia is one of the first people that he pitched when he started the Blackpool Combat Club. He said that at the age of 21, he saw Garcia wrestle 60 minutes at an indie show in front of 250 people. He thought that he was one of the best talents, best young talents that he had seen in years. And then he asked Garcia if he wants to be the best technical sports entertainer on the planet, or if Garcia wants to be the best technical wrestler in the world. And then he threw down the microphone and he walked off. The two of them are going to have a best 2 out of 3 falls match on Wednesday. All Out should be Chris Jericho against Bryan Danielson. I would have to think that's going to be the direction for All Out. This, though, what they did here in this segment, it does make me wonder, though. It makes me wonder if the story going into the match between Danielson and Jericho at All Out might revolve around Daniel Garcia in some way. And it might revolve around whether or not Garcia is going to stay with the JAS and be a sports entertainer, or if he might turn against Jericho in the group and side with Danielson in the Blackpool Combat Club and be a professional wrestler. So I wonder if maybe he'll kind of not be involved necessarily, but if they'll build that story for that match around Garcia and what he may or may not do. Because really, if you think about it, he would be a much better fit for the Blackpool Combat Club. But I also feel like the Combat Club has more than enough members, right? They've got Danielson, they've got Moxley, they've got Claudio, they've got Wheeler Yuta. Who am I missing? Do they have somebody else? Don't they have some other member? They got Regal. Oh, I said Ortiz the other night. Ortiz is, he's not officially a member. Ortiz is like the honorary member of the Blackpool Combat Club. I just don't know if they need any more members. We had Sammy Guevara and Ty Mello. She's no longer Ty Conti. Conti was her name from her previous marriage. She has been divorced for a few years now. She just never bothered to change her name. And so she is no longer Ty Conti. She is now Ty Mello against Dante Martin and Sky Blue. Oh, I know all the Sky Blue fans that we've got in this chat. I know that. I know that from the other night. We have a lot of Sky Blue fans here. Try to control yourselves as I talk about this. Sammy Guevara was on the outside. I'm not even going to have much to say about this match. Sammy later in the match was on the outside. Dante hit a tope on Sammy. Dante tried to get back into the ring. Ty Conti, though, grabbed his boot. They did a spot with Ty caught in between them that ended with a destroyer from Dante. Sammy hit a knee strike and went for the go to hell, but Martin got out and tagged in Sky Blue. The two women took out the two men before Ty hit the Ty KO to Sky Blue for the win. As if we were getting a title change here. I mean, give me a break. These titles have never before been defended on AEW television. And I had somebody argue with me in the comments section the other night. Might have been on the last review that I did. You've heard me talk about how I joke in AEW, oh my God, so many titles, right? There's always, everybody's a champion. They're bringing in people from other companies, and I think that's cool. That's something that WWE doesn't do. But everybody's a champion. Everybody has a belt. Some belts aren't even sanctioned by AEW, right? Everybody's got a belt. And it's kind of the law of diminishing returns where what do the belts even mean, right? I give you Exhibit A, Battle of the Belts 3. Now, I watched Battle of the Belts last weekend. It was okay. It was an hour. It was a taped hour on a Saturday night. It was the third one they've done, and it did by far the worst numbers of any of the Battle of the Belts. They couldn't even crack 500,000 viewers. Okay, Battle of the Belts. This is like their Clash of the Champions. It's all title matches. I think it did maybe 475,000 viewers. Now, why is that? There's probably a lot of reasons for that, right? Yes, it's a night they normally don't run. That's true. But Battle of the Belts is supposed to mean something. What could it possibly mean? First of all, your world championship is not on the line. Okay, I don't know that the world title has been on the line on any of the three specials so far. But forget that for a second. What could it possibly mean when everybody has a title on these shows? Every show has a championship match or a champion here, a champion there. So now we're going to have another show with all title matches. Well, who gives a flying fuck? You have a title match on every show every week. Why is Battle of the Belt supposed to feel special? It doesn't. So why would you expect that you would get a huge audience for it? Or maybe they knew they weren't going to get a huge audience for it, but the numbers are only going down, down, down for these specials. They're going to do a fourth one in October. I bet you those numbers will be even lower. But Sammy and Ty, they're still the AAA Mixed Tag Team Champions, so congratulations. We had Parker Boudreaux, who is now officially All Elite. He got the graphic from Tony Khan on Twitter earlier this evening. Parker Boudreaux is a member of a new faction in AEW called the Trustbusters, who have only this past week appeared on television. This has been exclusively a dark thing for the last several weeks. So he is part of the Trustbusters. He was going one-on-one here on the show with Sonny Kiss. Sonny Kiss has been with AEW since day one. We never see Sonny Kiss on television. I know Sonny Kiss has to be frustrated by that. Here's Sonny Kiss. Sonny Kiss was put in this ring to take a beating from Parker Boudreaux, and that's exactly what happened. Boudreaux immediately flattened Sonny with a lariat and a tackle. Sonny came back with an uppercut. Boudreaux, though, chokeslam Kiss. And Boudreaux hit his back suplex slam for the win in about a minute. This went maybe 60 seconds. I would love to know, because there was so much hype around the signing of this guy when WWE picked him up. Baby Brock. He looked like a young Brock Lesnar. Just the face, the body type, the hair. And the first thing they did was they had him shave his head to look like Uncle Fester. Completely changed his look. Called him Harlan. Put him with Joe Gacy. Didn't wrestle very often. He had a few matches on NXT, but for the most part, he just kind of stood there as the mute bodyguard for Joe Gacy. And in all the mass layoffs that they had over the past year and a half, he got swept up in that. And it was very surprising because he's still a young guy and they really seem to be very high on him. Triple H did make a comment some time ago that they have a system now where if you don't start to show improvement within 6 months, you're out of there. So was it a case where they just didn't think he was very good? He wasn't progressing fast enough? That's what I would have imagined. But then I saw there was some kind of report that they discovered something about him or about his past that I guess they didn't like, or there was some kind of red flag, and that may have been the reason, the real reason why they let him go, and I never heard anything, I never read anything about it again after that, so I don't know if that's the 100% truth or not. If it is, I would love to know what it was that made WWE give up on this guy that was so bad that they found out about, that they said, we have to cut ties with him. Because Tony Khan scooped him up, and now we're going to see if he gets over here in AEW. Now he's their project. And they're letting him, you know, go by his real name. He's got fucking hair now on his head. He's able to go out there and be himself. He's like a bull in a china shop. You watch him out there. He's clearly very green and very inexperienced. He's a greenhorn. But he's going to be their little pet project now. We'll see if he can get over. But I am still puzzled exactly what it was that WWE found out about or may have discovered that they previously did not know, if that's in fact the reason why they let him go. We may never know. But that was the rumor anyway, and I can't imagine what that would have been. Evidently, it didn't bother Tony Khan because he's all elite. We cut right to an Andrade promo in the back, right into the next segment. And we have Andrade in the back, and he's there with Roosh, and he's there with Jose the assistant. There's the Butcher. There's the Blade. There's Private Party. Holy shit. When was the last time we saw the whole band back together? I didn't think that the Andrade family office was a thing anymore. I thought it was just quietly over. Once Roosh came in, now they're bringing Dragon Lee in. We haven't seen Private Party on television in months. I figured that this was pretty much just over and done with. It may as well be. I mean, this faction sucks. The Hardy family office also sucked. It wasn't much better. So just quietly disband and let everybody go their separate ways and try to reboot Private Party and get them back on TV. Yeah, they're going to have to start pushing some younger, newer teams. The Acclaim should be number one on that list. Private Party should also be on that list. Can't just do FTR and the Bucks and the Lucha Bros, three of the best teams in the world. You want to start to mix in some of the younger teams and get them over, right? The Acclaimed are already over. The Acclaimed are going to be future tag team champions. Private Party, they're just completely forgotten about. So I saw them on TV. I'm like, whoa, what are they doing here? They've been hanging out on Dark now for months. So they're all standing around, and Andrade is talking about the Trios Championship Tournament, and the fact that he and Roosh and Dragon Lee are going to win the Trios titles, Isaiah Cassidy gets up in Andrade's face, and he says, you know, you've been sleeping on us. It's like they're forgotten about in the back of the line. Andrade reminded him that they work for him, and that they need to put their money where their mouth is and step up. So Private Party is going to be facing Swerve in Our Glory for the Tag Team Championships next Friday on Rampage. Andrade says he'll be watching that one very closely. So that was the segment to set that whole thing up. You know, again, this is one of the problems I have with the booking in AEW. Is you have little groups like this. The Dark Order. Well, I don't even care about the Dark Order, but we'll talk about this one. These guys have been a group. Okay, evidently they've always been a group. They didn't quietly disband. But we never see them on TV. Some people are going to say, well, you know, they've been on Dark. Or, oh, you should have seen the vlog, someone's vlog. They continued the story in the vlog. Well, maybe I missed the fucking vlog, okay? I don't miss the TV shows. And I also think that they're two distinctly different audiences. It would be nice to have them on television and have some kind of story to tell. But they'll just disappear. And then 2 months later, 3 months later, 4 months later, there's the Andrade family office. Or there's whoever. And they just kind of pick up with it. And I don't know if it's just a matter of just lazy booking. I don't know if it's a case where there's just so many. I think it's a case where there's so many people. These guys are just not a priority. But you should at least throw them out there every now and then, because you just kind of forget about it. And then you see them and it's like, we're supposed to care about this internal dissent within the group. How am I supposed to care about any of this? I didn't even know they were still together. Who cares? Andrade and Roosh, I mean, that's cool, but why are these guys still hanging out with him? You know, how is it benefiting them? That's the way I felt about Santana and Ortiz as part of the inner circle after a while. It wasn't benefiting them anymore. It was actually working against them. They were less over than they were before. These people, they tend to get lost in the shuffle, and it's one of my pet peeves with the booking in AEW. We had the Gun Club with Billy Gunn taking on the team of Beardhausen. That's what they called them. They called them Beardhausen, Danhausen, and Eric Redbeard. You talk about a random team. We have not seen Redbeard in many, many months, and very likely will not see him again for another 9 months, but he decided to pop up here on this Quake by the Lake episode of Rampage. Redbeard, who, you know, again, Revolution, last time I saw him, he was in that six-man tag on the pre-show. It was him and the Lucha Bros against the House of Black. Fucking great match. Great match. Stole the show. So Redbeard is out here, and he's shrugging off attacks from the Gun Club, tags in Danhausen, who went for the Danhausen curse. He got cut off by Colton Gunn. After a commercial, Redbeard got the tag. He ran wild on the Gun Club. And on the floor outside, he came running at both of them and did a diving crossbody and squashed them. He did a slingshot senton into the ring, spinning heel kick for two. Redbeard looked good out there, and it reminded me of that match from Revolution where he had his working boots on, and he looked good. Like, in the ring, he you know, everybody was talking about Lucha Bros, Buddy Matthews, and there was some great stuff with him and Rey Fénix in that match. But you know what? Redbeard held his own in that trios match to the point where I thought it might earn him a contract, but he never signed. Now, maybe that was his decision, or maybe Tony Khan just didn't want to sign him. But it's weird how, you know, he made that appearance, disappeared off the face of the earth, popped up here, probably will disappear again. I guess he's just sort of a utility guy that they could pick up the phone and call when they have a need for him, I guess. I don't know. For one night, anyway, Beardhausen was a thing. Redbeard hit a double suplex. Danhausen tagged in, called for a double team, but Billy pulled down the top rope. That sent Redbeard tumbling over and out to the floor, and that allowed Austin Gunn to hit the Famouser to pin Danhausen. After the match, Billy was disappointed with how much of a challenge that was for his sons. He said, "No wonder they call you the Ass Boys." He goes, I like the Acclaim more. And he told his sons, he said that they're going to have another match on Dynamite next week. He's going to try to toughen them up. Stokely Hathaway was shown in the front row as they were leaving. And he tried to pass his business card to Colton Gunn. And he thought about it. He went to go reach for it, but then Austin kind of grabbed him and walked off, and he didn't take the card. We went backstage with Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. Asked about Private Party coming for their tag team titles, and Keith Lee talked about how he dismantled both of them. That was his first night in, I believe, in AEW. That's where he launched Isaiah Cassidy into orbit. He launched him into the fucking stratosphere. And actually, that was before the House of Glory show. Talk about swerving our glory. You got to talk about House of Glory. Because we had Private Party on the House of Glory show. It might have been that week, actually, that weekend. And I sat down to interview Private Party. And I asked Isaiah about that. I said, I got to ask you about what happened with Keith Lee. And he was so traumatized, he didn't want to talk about it. That dude got launched. So Swerve said that Private Party, they're not even in the top five, but they're going to cut them a break. So we have Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland are going to defend the AEW tag team titles against Private Party on Rampage next week, who they admit are not even in the top five. So rankings be damned. We have rankings for everything in AEW. These guys are not even in the top five. They're going to make an exception, and they're getting a tag team title match next week. Okay. We have the new FTW champion. More champions here. They should have called this Battle of the Belts tonight. This was Battle of the Belts 4. We had champions galore. We had the AAA Mixed Tag Team Champions on the show. We had an appearance by the AEW Tag Team Champions on the show. We had the FTW Champion on the show. Hook comes out next. In the ring, Tony Schiavone asks him about the title and says, is it always an open challenge now with the FTW title? And Hook just says, yup. And then somebody named The Reality, this is what he called himself, The Reality Zach Clayton, comes walking out. I couldn't pick this guy out of a fucking lineup. I've never heard of him before. I've never seen him before. And I, honest to God, I don't even know what, apparently he was on a reality show. He said he's from New Jersey, so it was probably that Jersey Shore garbage, but I have no idea what reality show he may have possibly been on, nor do I give a shit. He comes out and he says that he's a reality show superstar from the great state of New Jersey. So right there, he's full of shit. He challenged Hook to a match next week, and Hook held up the FTW title, which I guess was the signal that he accepted his challenge. Think of all the people who rarely, if ever, get television time on these shows. And I'll bet that you could probably rattle off 10 names right now if you wanted to. But they make time for The Reality, Zach Clayton, on this show. I'm not sure that we needed a promo from Mr. Clayton if Hook is going to be doing an open challenge. We know the guy's going to get mauled next week. You could just as easily have had Hook go out there and say that I'm going to defend my title in an open challenge and then kind of tease it out and say, well, he'll be here next week and we'll see who steps up to wrestle Hook. I wonder how many more people are going to be tuned into Rampage next week because, oh my God, Zach Clayton is going to be on the show. Guys, The Reality is going to be on the show next week. Holy fucking shit. I can't wait. This is going to be awesome. We had the main event. Orange Cassidy against Ari Daivari of the Trustbusters, who has me blocked on Twitter. I have no idea why. Anyway, Daivari grabbed the microphone and he offered Cassidy a spot in the Trustbusters. Daivari said that all Cassidy has to do is just lay down for him. So Orange Cassidy lays down for him, and when Daivari goes to pin him, Cassidy just keeps rolling away slowly until eventually he rolls to the outside and then he puts his hands in his pockets. After a break, Cassidy hit a diving DDT for a near fall. He set up for the orange punch. Slim J jumped up on the apron. Chuck Taylor, though, swept his legs out. Parker Boudreaux grabbed him by the throat on the floor, but Cassidy saw this, and so to save his friends, he did a tope through the ropes, and he knocked Boudreaux back into the barricade. Back inside, Daivari hit an iconoclasm for a near fall. Cassidy came back, though, finally hit the orange punch and picked up the win. After the match, Boudreaux mowed down both members of Best Friends with clotheslines, and then he splashed Chuck Taylor in the corner. Was it Chuck or Trent? It might have been Trent. So Orange Cassidy now is all alone in the ring with Parker Boudreaux. When Sonny Kiss runs down to the ring to seemingly assist Orange Cassidy, but Sonny Kiss ends up turning on Orange Cassidy, and he kicks Cassidy in his orange nutsack. Boudreaux then plants Cassidy with his back suplex into a slam finish. So Sonny Kiss has joined the Trustbusters. You know what I say? Good for Sonny Kiss. Like I said before, Sonny Kiss has been on this roster since day one, never gets to appear on TV, is exclusively on Dark or Dark Elevation. I don't even know what Sonny Kiss has been up to. And now at least he'll be part of the Trustbusters. I don't think it's going to make a difference as far as television time. You know, congratulations, you're part of a faction that's going to get 2 weeks worth of TV time before you're right back on Dark. But at least it's something for Sonny Kiss to do. I know Sonny Kiss has a lot of fans. Sonny Kiss, hey, I was a fan of Sonny Kiss in Lucha Underground when it was Exolicious. Remember Exolicious in Lucha Underground? That was the first exposure that I had to Sonny Kiss. I was very impressed. So, you know, hey, the guy can work. But I don't know that it's going to mean much in the way of more television time going forward. But that was Rampage. I thought that's just a very weak episode. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with Rampage. I don't know what's going on with Rampage, but I know that I've been pretty happy the last couple of weeks with SmackDown. I know that. Let's take a look at these polls. We'll start with SmackDown. Roughly 80% thumbs up for SmackDown. 14% thumbs in the middle, 6.4% thumbs down. That compares to Rampage like this. I'm telling you, man, I feel like I'm in Stranger Things. I'm in the Upside Down. All these polls now are in favor of WWE, and the AEW polls are all down. It was the same thing for Dynamite. 52.5% up. For Rampage, 25.8% thumbs in the middle and 21.7% thumbs down. So there you go. You know the drill, at Solomonster on Twitter. You should be following me on there anyway, but that's where you can go to vote. I don't know what's going on. The world has turned upside down, man, these last few weeks. How quickly things have turned. It is amazing. Now let's go back and read your super chat. Hey, where are we at on the likes? Are we doing Be the Booker tonight or not? I should check and see where we are on the like front. Oh, look at that. 655 likes. I know we can hit 700. But yes, we will be doing Be the Booker. I knew you wouldn't disappoint me. We have got Tuxedo T. Servo, who could not make the live stream tonight, but wanted to submit for Wrestling Pickup Line. We were doing this the other night. I don't even know how we got started on this. Everybody was doing wrestling pickup line, like corny wrestling-related pickup lines. So his is, I'm like Ico Pro, baby. You gotta want it. Yeah, you have to be an older fan, I think, to get that reference. That's not bad. That's not bad. Joseph Brooks, buy, rent, or sell on these non-wrestling dream matchups. Would you have liked to have seen Tyson against Ali, Joe Montana against Tom Brady, or MJ against LeBron? So I have to do a buy, rent, or sell. Hey, Simi Valley, thank you for the creepy Jeff Hardy $20 super chat. Jeff Hardy's hearing in his case once again delayed until October. There's your Jeff Hardy update. Still in rehab, I guess. As far as anybody knows, he might still be in rehab. I don't know where he is. Oh boy, you buy, sell, or rent. I would go, you know what I would do? I would buy on Tyson and Ali. I'm going to rent on MJ and LeBron, and I'm going to sell on Montana and Brady. Dre Hund with the disgusted Brandy Rhodes super chat. Joseph Brooks, though, thank you for that one. Shinakuma, thank you for the $4. Joseph says, I've often heard AJ Styles be referred to as this modern generation's HBK. Who would you say is this modern generation's Bret Hart? I think Bryan Danielson. I would say he is the closest thing to a modern Bret Hart. and buy or sell Wardlow's power bombs or Hobbs' spine busters. Oh, I gotta go Hobbs on that one. Hobbs has a fucking great spine buster. Lakers Pats. Triple H should bring back Jim Johnston. I agree. Dick the Cock Johnson. Trustbusters should be the first trios champions. I'm going to pretend that you didn't say that. Winter's Paul with the $10 super chat. It's so nice to look forward to WWE again. Yes, we watch, but with a sense of dread. And at least for now, that feeling is gone and replaced with excitement. Baby steps. Baby steps. Triple H is taking baby steps. Rome was not built in a day, but they are headed in the right direction, I feel. Winter's Paw also says, nice to see Sonny finally be given a chance on TV. Not what I would have done, but if Cole Carter and Leon Ruff can get an opportunity, why not Sonny Kiss? Tyrone Dunstan, thank you for the $2. Brumakian Productions with the $10 super chat. I find it odd that Undertaker back in the 90s challenged for the Intercontinental title and never won it. Why is that? Because he didn't need it. Undertaker didn't need any title. He definitely did not need the Intercontinental title. Look at what they were talking about on TV tonight. The Intercontinental title was always thought to be the workhorse championship. That's why they put it on people like Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Owen Hart, Jeff Jarrett and people like that. It was not meant for somebody like The Undertaker. It was beneath The Undertaker. Undertaker was a headliner from day one. The Intercontinental title, it would have been like putting the IC title on Hogan at WrestleMania 6. It wouldn't have made sense. It was beneath him. He didn't need it. Quintus Brown, Tony Khan just made it official. Parker is all elite. Temjin Zephyr with the $9.99. When I heard Michael Cole mention the IC title as the workman's title, I began to feel very happy to see a prestigious title have newfound meaning, especially as the main event. Josiah Ball, who do you think from AEW is next to return? Kenny Omega. It's going to happen on Dynamite next week. Nash DTV. Happy to see Hit Row back, but I do think Triple H should space out these returns. Oh, no. Triple H is in his Tony Khan phase right now. We need a new return every single week. Soon we're going to have them saying Triple H has a major announcement next week. This is Triple H in his Tony Khan phase right now. He's loving this. He ain't going to stop. He's got more. We're going to get more returns. He ain't done yet. Chauncey Curry, fun show tonight. I'm genuinely excited about watching WWE again. Walter is an absolute beast. Hashtag make Nakamura great again. Bobby's World, 2110. Cool to see Hit Row back. They at least deserve an opportunity to succeed or fail on their own. Bob the Builder, do you see Parker Boudreaux ending up like Hobbs and Wardlow for AEW in a couple of years? It's impossible to say. He's so early in his development. I've seen so little of him. I haven't seen much out of him in his matches. I have no idea. WWE thought so, but then they let him go. So, Taco Tuesday, trust bustin' makes me feel good. Temjin Zephyr, since Swerve is in AEW, who can you see taking his place in Hit Row? I don't see anybody. I saw Carmelo Hayes on Twitter was like, I'm not interested. I guess somebody suggested him for Hit Row. And he was like, no, I'm fine on my own. If they're just going to be a tag team that got B-Fab as their manager, then I don't know that they need to replace him. There really isn't anybody who I can see just stepping in and making sense right now. Von Tell, thank you for the $2. Oh, look who it is. It is D'Arlo. Letting the world know what he thinks of Bully Ray. But before we get to D'Arlo, we got to talk about Von Tell. Better Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, Bad Blood 97 or WrestleMania 26? Bad Blood 97. Kyle Bowman with the 1999. Just want to show a little love. You have been my main source for wrestling news for about a decade. Keep up the great content. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, props to Cole with that little Game of Thrones reference about what Scarlet is to Cross. I like that. Yeah, what he called her like the Oracle of something. I didn't catch the entire thing. Be calm, see clearly. Guess who got promoted? Me and a raise. I'm going to look to watch the show later. Thanks for keeping the reviews going. And I like hearing about Rampage and SmackDown. Well, congrats on the promotion. That's very cool. Dev to Dust, Heat or Casino? Oh, I love them both. I got to go Heat. I love Heat. Heat's such a great movie. Mario Duro, should I put down 500 smackers on the Mets going to the World Series? I will never tell anybody to gamble their money away. Because if I tried to gamble, I'd lose all my money. But yes, the Mets are going to go to the World Series. Even though the Phillies eked by them tonight, they got lucky. I have the Mets going to the World Series. Rizzo, good evening, friends. Do you think Triple H back, that they give Shayna and others back their themes, or was that more of a CFO issue? That was more of a CFO issue. Fire Panda 007, apparently Bray Wyatt has agreed to return to WWE. I will believe it when I see it. There have been a lot of rumors about Bray, and I don't know about that, but I do expect him to be back in WWE. Do I think Bray Wyatt will end up back there? Yes, I do. Mr. Notorious Chico, 86. Buy or sell, which tag team that you would want to return to WWE? Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan or Enzo and Cass? Well, I would think that Big Cass is probably going to get another shot at some point. I kind of like, you know, Birch and Lorcan, I like them. They're like this scrappy team, you know. They would kind of fit in better, frankly, with the Brawling Brutes than, you know, having Ridge Holland and Butch in there. I'd like to see Butch go away and just get Pete Dunne back. I don't know, you know, either one of those teams. I'm all in favor of more tag teams. I say get Birch and Lorcan back together, put them in that division too. Shinakuma, cheers to everyone in the chat tonight, and cheers once again to the Sala Monster. Thank you, sir. Fire Panda, look at this. Spreading money all over my screen right now. There he is. There's my boy, JM. Scared the bejesus out of me with the $200 bomb from 45 minutes ago. I stepped away from watching on the television to come smash the like button for Be the Booker. By the way, Solomonster, you are positioned closer to Sasha Banks in the new sub pop-ups than many of those who paid $100 for the photo op at C2E2. Yes, I saw those photos, and I will say that if I had spent $130 to have my picture taken with Sasha Banks, and I had to stand 6 feet away from her, I'd be pretty upset about that, too. And I don't want to hear about COVID or anything like that, because she was posing close with other people. A lot of the women I saw, and some of the other celebrities that were at C2E2, but like the nasty wrestling fans, they had to keep them at arm's length. Yeah, no, I think that was... people have a right to be upset about that. And that may be more on C2E2, to be honest with you, because they should have at least been made aware of the fact that, look, you're not going to be able to be close to them. You're not going to be able to put your arm around them. And apparently these people didn't know until they got there. That's not right. So it's become a meme now where Sasha is standing here and then everybody else is standing on the other side. JM. It's true. I am closer to Sasha when she pops up on screen than most of those people were. Lion O with the 1999, was there ever an explanation why the guns didn't wrestle at Forbidden Door? Thanks for all the free content over the years. The guns? Which guns? We have the Gun Club. We have the Motor City Machine Guns. I'm blanking here. You got to help me out. What guns are we talking about here? We have a lot of guns in this country. Man Without Mercy. The Lionel, thank you. Somebody will chime in and then I'll answer your question. I'm completely blanking out on who you're referring to. Man Without Mercy. Better promo. Rock Austin WrestleMania X7 or Michaels Undertaker WrestleMania 26. That's the Running Up That Hill one. The Placebo cover for the Kate Bush song. I love that promo package, but look, My Way is iconic. Austin and Rock, My Way, WrestleMania 17, I can't vote against that. I cannot vote against that. I gotta buy on that. King Bling Blah, would you trust Triple H with the wild card rule? I don't think there should be a wild card rule. So I would want him to get rid of the wild card rule. That would be my preference. John Falchetta, who is the greatest intercontinental champion to you? I say Mr. Perfect. To me, yes. To me, it is going to be Mr. Perfect or Razor Ramon. All right, so Roderick says that he's probably referring to the Gun Club. They were supposed to team up with Max Caster. Okay, yes. So they ran to the back. I think it was just part of the angle. I don't think there was anything wrong or anything. It was a little weird, but I don't think it had anything to do with an injury or anything other than just advancing the angle that they were doing with them. So that's honestly what I think it was. Simi Valley with the $20. Excited to see how Triple H adds depth to the tag team division. Well, you're already seeing it tonight. Can you see him bringing Enzo and Cass back? Cass, yes. Enzo, no. Because say what you want to about the allegations against him and everything, I don't get the sense that Enzo was very well liked even before that. There were a lot of reports about him, locker room etiquette, and guests that he would bring backstage that weren't supposed to be there, and him being annoying to some people. So, no, I don't see them bringing back Enzo Amore. Dre Hun says he was at SmackDown. Crowd was quiet for Hit Row. Well, I mean, why wouldn't they be? Unless you watched NXT, how the hell would you even know who these guys are? They're missing their number one guy, and they had, what, 2 weeks on television when they got promoted last year? Nobody knows who the fuck they are. You've got to build them back up all over again. I'm not surprised nobody knew who they were. How are people supposed to know who they are? Unless they watch NXT, they would have no idea. They were on television 2 weeks, and they were never seen again. I don't blame the crowd. Miguel Maldonado Jr., buy, rent, or sell. Bret Hart versus Ricky Steamboat. Bret Hart versus Macho King. Bret Hart against Jake Roberts. I'm going to buy on Bret Hart and the Macho King. I'm going to rent Bret Hart and Ricky Steamboat. And I'm going to sell Bret Hart and Jake Roberts. Diarlo with a $30 Bully the Clown super chat from 11 minutes ago. Hey, Solomonster, it's been a while. Is this a hot take? But do you think that Moxley should win and unify the AEW world title over Punk, and then do a storyline with MJF instead of Punk when he comes back? No, I think it should be Punk. I think Moxley and MJF could be very good, but I think it has to be CM Punk. For the story to work, it has to be CM Punk that he beats. We've got El Ruinero. $5 super chat. Would a Lucha Underground style all night long match bring in viewers for Rampage, and who would you book for the match? Generally speaking, the 60-minute long type of matches are not good for ratings. You might be able to find one or two examples of where it was, but no, I don't think it's going to help at all. If anything, I think it might hurt. To have one long match like that interrupted by 16 commercial breaks, I don't think that's going to do Rampage any good. As far as who would I book for a match like that, I mean, take your pick. I mean, there's so many talented guys on that roster. You could take a Bryan Danielson and put him in there with almost anybody. I mean, literally, I mean, you have endless options as far as a 60-minute, hour-long match if you wanted to do one in AEW. There's so many different people that you can do it with that I can't even think of who the top three would be. You've got Pac on the roster. You've got people like Swerve. I know he's in a tag team right now, but again, I said Danielson. You've got Claudio. Man, I mean, you've got Kenny. We know Kenny can go an hour, right? He's done that before. A lot of people on that roster, I think, you could do that with. Fire Panda, we should get this Tuesday in Texas as a pay-per-view again. More pay-per-views? I don't need more pay-per-views. I'm already streaming Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Now you want me to stream on Tuesday? Come on. Well, we got Fire Panda. We should get... Oh, he's repeated the same one twice. So nice, he had to say it twice. Thank you, Fire Panda. What is this? JM dropped a $100 super chat. He dropped a $200 bomb. And now he dropped a hundy bomb, which I must have missed. AEW has signed more talent than they have TV time. Lately, they don't seem to value 1 hour of that TV time on Friday. It is still weekly episodic television, and television money is where their bread is buttered. They should treat it as such, and no one should suggest watching a vlog to catch up. Well said. I agree. It's nice supplemental content. I think you can use things like the vlogs, like Sammy does a vlog. You know, they got BTE. Ethan Page does a vlog. I think that's great. I was actually watching part of Ethan Page's blog a little bit earlier. It was in my recommendeds. It was him in a wrestling collect. It wasn't wrestling, but it was like a collectible toy shop with, of all people, Brody King. And I was watching like 10 minutes of it, and I thought it was fun. It was interesting. I think you can use that type of content to supplement the existing storylines on television, but I don't think that you could or should use that kind of stuff to shoot your own angle and then take it and put it on TV without bothering to explain what's going on. That is not something that I would do. That is not something that is going to work. And I think that's really doing a disservice to your television audience, who are going to look at some of that stuff and go, what the hell's going on here? And be completely lost. And then you get people, well, you should be watching on YouTube if you want to know what's going on. Hey, motherfucker, I'm watching the television show. I'm not watching everything that's on YouTube. So they need to explain what's going on the television show. It's one of the most obnoxious fucking answers that I hear sometimes. When people start arguing back and forth, well, you should really watch the YouTube vlogs, then you would know what's going on. Shut the fuck up. Fire Panda 007. Moo for us, Mr. Monster. Moo. Want the real Moo, you got to get them the Moo Super Chat. Juan Ocampo, would you rather have a short title reign like JBL 04 or Jinder Mahal in 2016? Jinder Mahal was champion for 6 months. I would not call that a short reign. It was much longer than it should have been. Didn't he beat Nakamura a whole bunch of times? Or, he says, a boring reign of terror like Roman or Triple H. Like Corny says, AEW is lazy booking. If it were me... Oh, wait, so as a viewer. I thought you meant me. If it were me, I'd want to be like Roman Reigns. I'd be champion for 2 years. Make the big bucks. But if you're talking about as a viewer, which do I prefer? I think that if you have the right person, a longer reign could work. I was enjoying the Roman Reigns run until it just got to the point where it was like, okay, we've now crossed over into Triple H Reign of Terror territory. I'm tired of this. This isn't fun anymore. He's gone through everybody. He's not around half the time. This is not good television. But I think a well-booked longer reign is probably what I would prefer. We just hit 700 likes. Thank you for that, guys. Let's see how high we can get. As RVD would say, see how high we can get. Oofman Entertainment with the $5. Wonder what Johnny Ace thinks about all the talents he personally called and let go due to budget cuts. Coming back to WWE and he is out of WWE. I don't particularly care what Johnny Ace thinks about any of this. Tech Nation. Well, at last week's SmackDown during the dark match, Butch seemed to be acting more like Pete Dunne rather than a wild animal. Well, that's progress. I'll believe it when I see it on TV, though. Rizzo. I saw a shoot with Enzo and Triple H. Did not like Enzo. Vince was the one who liked him, so I would not hold my breath on Enzo coming back. Yeah, it's like what I just said. I don't get the impression that Enzo was very well-liked. And if he's not well-liked by Triple H, then yeah. I don't think we're going to be seeing him back anytime soon. GCC305, a solo, by yourself. Hearing your fans say they've been listening for 10 years, or your fans fighting over having the last super chat to end your show. I always love hearing from people who have been longtime listeners. So if you've been listening since day one, like we've got some ride or die people who have been with me from the very first episode, 15 years ago. It's going to be 15 years in November. And then I have people who have been listening for 7 years, 5 years, 10 years. I always love hearing that. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, you should watch this YouTube show called Impact. I think I'll pass. Thank you. And Fire Panda, other than dives and super kicks, what is the most overused move in wrestling? The Destroyer. One of the most overused moves in wrestling. Otaku Film says 15 years. Wow. Solid Monster, you must be 50 now. Well, my birthday is coming up October 6th, and I'm not turning 50. Although I see it off in the distance, but I am not 50. I'll tell you what, if I'm 50 years old, I'm a damn good-looking 50-year-old. I will say, man. I hit the fucking fountain of youth if I'm 50. What's my secret? I'm not going to tell any of you. Hey, we got KGBLK24 with the $5 disappointed Solemn Monster Super Chat. Do you see WWE doing more intergender stuff? For example, Rhea Ripley against Rey Mysterio. I think Dominic wants that. Rhea Ripley, we're already seeing Rhea Ripley against Dominic Mysterio every week on TV. It happens off camera. October 6th. No, I don't think October 6th is a Dynamite show. There might be a taping that night. I'm almost positive that my birthday falls on a Thursday this year. So what we'll have to do is we'll have to celebrate on the stream on Wednesday, and we'll celebrate on Friday. And I think my actual birthday is sandwiched in the middle, but I haven't checked the calendar. I'm almost positive my birthday's on a Thursday, though. I think it's the day after Dynamite. Hey, there's Sasha Banks. Put my arm around. I can't. I am closer now to Sasha Banks than all of those fools who paid $130 to take a picture with her. Maybe John Cena was in the middle of them. You know, we couldn't see it, but he was in between them, maybe. I don't know. Do not pass go. The most overused move in wrestling is the surprise roll-up. There's so many overused moves, it's just... I mean, I mentioned the Destroyer, right? You mentioned Super Kicks and Tope Cone Heroes, and we should make a whole list, like Jericho back in WCW with that long list of 1,004 holds. How about the near fall? How about that? The kick out at 2.999. Isn't that the most overused move in wrestling? Dr. Dakota Scorpio, congrats to the chat to getting 600 likes for Be the Booker. Well, you know what? You got enough likes, right? So I guess we should probably get to it right now. You wanted it. You made it possible. You willed it into existence. So let's end the week on the right note. It is time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
You got us to 600 likes. Ask and ye shall receive. It is time for Be the Booker. We begin with the men as we try to book ourselves our own little forbidden door. I want to book some great matches for you guys here. I'm going to do what Batista said. I'm going to give you what you want. We're going to start things out with Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. I picked him the other night, actually. I landed on Mr. Perfect. Didn't we do Mr. Perfect and the Macho Man? Was that the match I booked the other night? Well, I will never complain on landing on Mr. Perfect. Let's take a look at who Mr. Perfect is going to be stepping into the ring with. It will be Mr. Perfect one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. I don't know why I double-tapped that, but there you go. Mr. Perfect and Shinsuke Nakamura, two former Intercontinental champions. Hell of a match. We are off to a rip-roaring start here, but that is about to come to a furious end, because now we are going to try with the women. And I don't know that this is going to go as well. But let's see. We begin with Queen Zelina. Zelina Vega, who has been off television now for months. I don't know what's going on with Zelina Vega, but there it is, the Queen's Crown. Let's see who she's getting into the ring with here. Zelina Vega is going to go one-on-one with Francine. That is most definitely not a main event match. I don't even know what Francine is up to these days. I did see that she had done a shoot interview a few years ago. She looks good. She looks good. She looks healthy. Unlike a lot of the other people from ECW from back during that time period. Let's do the tag team thing. We got Strike Force, former WWF Tag Team Champions. I see Rick Martel, somebody who should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Going to be very interesting now that Vince McMahon is no longer making those decisions. Who does Triple H put in the Hall of Fame? Maybe they'll put it to an actual vote amongst the talent. Maybe they'll have a formal system now for picking candidates for the Hall of Fame. That's something I haven't heard anybody talk about. Vince McMahon no longer in charge of who goes into the Hall of Fame. Maybe we'll see Rick Martel one of these days. Let's see. Strike Force going to get into the ring with... Oh my God, these guys again. You know what, though? That's not a bad match. I actually think that could be a pretty good match. American Males. American Males. It's the best theme song. Actually, Strike Force had Girls in Cars. It's a pretty catchy song, too. Who had the catchier song? Was it Girls in Cars or American Males? American Males. All the new wrestling fans are like, what is this geek talking about? What is he babbling on about? Talking about the glory days of wrestling. That's what we're talking about. Is that Buff? Yes, that was Buff. That was Buff Bagwell. Thunder Knight, thank you for the $5. Do you think Roman's heel turn would have happened had there not been a sabbatical from WWE prior to WrestleMania 36? I think eventually he would have demanded it. I mean, that was his call, and he claims he told Vince McMahon, this is what we're doing. Either we do this or I'm not coming back. He gave him an ultimatum. I think it was inevitable that he would have gone heel at some point. And Dr. Dakota Scorpio, but through it all, when there was, what does that say? When there was doubt, we ate it up and spit it out. We faced it all and we stood tall and did it our way. You know what threw me off? Some of the words in your super chat don't have a space between them, so. It's like doubt and we. There's no space. So I'm trying to read this like doubt we. And then he has the word out and the word we, and there's no space. So I'm like a moron. I'm sitting here going, doubt we? Out we? I sound like I'm speaking some kind of foreign language here. Punctuation is very important. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, I'm telling you. Punctuation and syntax are very important. Always put your periods and your apostrophes and your commas and your spaces, hyphens, semicolons. Always make sure you put them in there. I took a copy editing class many years ago. I'm a big stickler for that kind of thing. Dr. Dakota Scorpio says, sorry, my internet cuts out when I donate. So that's the excuse, huh? Blame the internet for it. See, that's what Vince McMahon should have done for all of his shitty booking. He should have just blamed the internet for it. I'm trying to catch up on these chats here. Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. I've heard Bruce has said that they've reached out to Rick Martel before about possibly going into the Hall of Fame and he wasn't interested. I'm throwing his name out there as one possibility. There's so many other names who should already be in the Hall of Fame. If you're going to do a Hall of Fame and acknowledge people, There's people who should definitely be in there who are not. Now that Vince is out of the way, let's see what next year's Hall of Fame class looks like. I would think that they could get Big Dave, right? Dave Batista. Triple H loves Batista. And Batista was going to go in the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, and COVID happened, and he wanted to do it in front of actual people. So it's just a matter of scheduling. I know he's filming Dune 2 right now. And he's got another movie project for, I think, Netflix coming up after that. But I think Batista could very well be the headliner for next year's Hall of Fame. I think it's very possible. Oh, I see EJ. EJ's coming in. EJ Slemp. With a $4.99. Buy or sell. On which mentor/protege relationship we never got? Mr. Perfect and Dolph Ziggler or Eddie Guerrero and Angel Garza? Mr. Perfect and Dolph Ziggler. I mean, Dolph was like, baby Kurt. The way he bumped around in there, still does. I'd probably pick that one. You know, don't sleep on Lex Luger as a possible Hall of Fame induction. I'm going to talk about, I got a lot to say about the Lex Luger biography. We're going to really go through it on Sunday. It's going to be the big segment towards the end of the show. And one of the things that Lex mentioned when he was doing all the interviews in preparation for the biography before it aired, he talked about if he were to ever go into the Hall of Fame, it's something that he would try to get up out of his chair for. Because he can get up out of his wheelchair. He walks around at home a little bit. Sometimes he falls. He just has to kind of pace himself. He's actually made a miraculous recovery from where he had been and where they said he would be. He says that would be something he would try to get up out of his chair on his own and stand up for on stage if they put him in the Hall of Fame. And I think there's definitely a chance that we could see Luger in the Hall of Fame. That biography may be a very big help to getting him into the Hall of Fame next year. And you can't deny the fact, I mean, if you just look at his career, that he belongs in there. Fire Panda, if you have the choice, who would your entire class of 2023 be for the Hall of Fame? I don't know. I don't know what the entire class would be. I would put Demolition in there. I know why they haven't gone in. They were part of that concussion lawsuit, but now Vince is gone. Maybe Triple H will be more receptive to a Demolition induction. Demolition should be in there. Luger. Yeah, look, Luger is somebody who I think should be in the Hall of Fame. Batista, I think Batista is going to be the headliner. If I had to take an early guess, I think Batista will be the headline attraction in the Hall of Fame next year. So what is that? Batista, Demolition. I told you I put Rick Martel in there, but if he doesn't want to go in there, that's up to him. I guess, you know, you can't force the guy in there. I do think Elizabeth should be in the Hall of Fame. That would be maybe a little weird, though, to put her in if you're going to put Luger in the same year. You know, maybe you want to separate the two. What happened to Lex? I did not know that he is in a chair. I mean, Lex had a spinal stroke 15 years ago. It was like a nerve impingement, I think, in his neck. He was on an airplane, just the way he turned his neck. And then I think the way he was resting on it, he was cutting off blood flow to it, ended up in his hotel room and he just dropped. Whatever happened just happened, and he was on the floor and he couldn't move. And they thought he would be paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life. He would never walk again. All things considered, he's made a pretty remarkable recovery, but it was basically described as a spinal stroke is what happened. Dr. Dakota says, is my spacing and wording better now? Yes, it is. It is much better. Rock will go into the Hall of Fame, but I don't think Rock is going into the Hall of Fame for a while yet. I know they're in LA next year. I don't think The Rock is going in next year. I think they should start, by the way, I think they should start putting referees in the Hall of Fame too. Acknowledge them. Tommy Young, right? The Hebners. You know, Dave just passed away. Start putting some referees in there. The referees are underappreciated. The referees are a very important part of these matches. And referees are also sometimes part of some very big, important angles, right? The twin referee angle with both Hebners back in 88. But we lost Dave Hebner and we lost Tim White this year alone. And I think it would be well-deserving to give them some acknowledgement at these Hall of Fame ceremonies. Would I mind if it was a fan vote for the Hall of Fame? I just think it would be a fucking mess. You'd have everybody voting for John Cena in the Hall of Fame, put Sasha Banks, put Alexa Bliss in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it would be a fucking mess. You'd have to really, like, boil it down to, like, the choices that you want. I would not put it to a fan vote. Or at least I wouldn't have a binding fan vote. You can get fan feedback. I would not have a binding fan vote for the Hall of Fame. If anything, I would maybe have a vote amongst the employees and the talent and the people within the company, but then ultimately there's like a committee of people who make that decision, maybe not one person. It was always the whims of Vince McMahon. It would be nice if they kind of opened that up to a few different people instead of having it just, you know, be the decision of one person. That's what the WCW Hall of Fame had. Gordon Solie was running this whole committee in charge of the WCW Hall of Fame when that used to be a thing. Ricky Edmond, thank you for the five. If that Goldberg and Steve Austin dream match had happened at WrestleMania 18 during the invasion, who would you have put over? Stone Cold. Gotta have Stone Cold go over. Turtlehead says... Bliss fan would vote for Bliss and Bray for the Hall of Fame. We love Bliss fan. I'll say one thing about Bliss fan. He is passionate. He is definitely passionate. Fire Panda, Jimmy Cordero should be in the Hall of Fame. There's a lot of referees that should be in there before Jimmy Cordero. I hear about Fernando Tatis Jr. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. What a moron. Well, he'll have 80 games at home to think about the mistake that he made. Sucks for the Padres, though. Now they get fucked over. Mike Chioda? Of course, Mike Chioda. Absolutely. And Fire Panda says, Alex Wright for the Hall of Fame? No. Magnum TA? You know, Triple H grew up a fan, I think, watching NWA. He might have been watching Mid-Atlantic. So that's something to watch out for. Are there any key NWA and Mid-Atlantic names who are not yet in the Hall of Fame who Triple H might be a fan of? I see Magnum TA being mentioned in the chat. Yeah, very possible. So I think all the members of the Horsemen are in, right? Except maybe Ole, but that I think is what the product, that's the product I think he was following when he was in his younger years. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, when the time is right, who should beat Gunther for the Intercontinental title? You know, he shouldn't lose that title for so long that I'm not even sure, like, what show he'll be on or who they may call up from NXT. If I just look at the current roster, though, the people that I would have beat him are already higher up. They're like competing for the world championship. I'm talking about like McIntyre and stuff. You know what? I'll tell you what. I have a name. The person who I would have beat him for the Intercontinental title, Sheamus. Just because I would love to have a program with Walter and Sheamus. Think about the matches those two could have, right? But I know Sheamus has always wanted to hold the Intercontinental title. It's like, you know, the Universal title, he hasn't held that, but that's like a relatively new belt. He's always wanted to hold the Intercontinental. It's like the one traditional championship he has never held in his entire career. And that would be the perfect way to get that belt on him. So you build up to a feud with him and Sheamus. Maybe he beats Sheamus first, but you keep the program going and eventually Sheamus beats him. I could get behind that. Are the Koloffs not in the Hall of Fame? Ivan and Nikita? Yeah, for some reason, I thought they were. God, you know, some of these people, they'll probably just put them in there quietly as like the legacy inductions. What a shame. All right, this has been fun. You guys came out in full force tonight. We got the likes up. We got Be the Booker done. Got some big-ass super chats tonight. I love it. I love it. It gets me going. It gets the adrenaline going here for the Solemn Monster during these streams, which is bad. It's like drinking 5 cups of coffee at 1:30 in the morning. Now I'm not going to be able to go to bed, but I have somewhere to be tomorrow. So yeah, I better get some sleep. I'm going to be back with you live on Monday night. We're going to go live again on Monday after Raw. So come on back. We're going to have Bobby Lashley and AJ Styles for the U.S. title. And who knows what other surprises might be up Triple H's sleeve. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of names going around. You've heard all the names. You never know who might show up. So I'm going to be back live with you then. Of course, first, it's episode 769 on Sunday. Cover all the news of the week. Big Lex Luger discussion, big Lex Luger biography review coming up on the podcast for the A&E show. I'll tell you whether or not I think it's worth going out of your way to see. Enjoy your weekend. I will see you on Sunday for 769. Nice. I'll see you then.